place that both Grant and Tavallera immediately looked up. Grant felt a sharp pang in his gut. Tavallera's eyes flicked wide for an instant. "Rendezvous maneuver," Tavallera said after a moment's startled silence. "Yes, of course," said Grant, trying to make it sound nonchalant. Pushing himself up from his chair, Tavallera suggested, "Come on, let's go down to the observation bubble and watch." But the captain said, laughing, Tavallera headed for the hatch. "Come on, you don't have to stay in your cage every second of every day. What's she going to do if she catches us, throw us off the ship?" The communications chime on the bulkhead screen sounded. "Incoming message for Grant Archer," announced the comm system's synthesized voice. Grateful for the interruption, Grant said, "Put it on screen, please." The screen remained blank. "This is a private communication," the computer warned. A message from Marjorie, Grant thought. "Tavallera will leave me to see it alone. If he doesn't, I can ask him to leave." "On screen, please," he repeated. To his surprise, the screen showed the twin seals of the International Astronautical Authority and the New Morality Censorship Board. Before Grant could react, it flicked off, to be replaced by a lengthy document headed with the words "Secrecy Agreement." Grant saw that Tavallera's eyes were bulging. "I'd better go to my bunk and read this on my personal handheld," Grant said. "I guess you better," Tavallera said in a small voice. As Grant brushed past him to step out into the passageway, Tavallera said, "I never figured you for an NM agent." "I'm not," Grant blurted, wishing it were true. "Yeah, sure." Grant headed for the claustrophobic compartment he shared with Tavallera, while the young engineer went the other way, toward the observation blister. Once alone in his cramped bunk, Grant read the secrecy agreement very carefully. Twice. Three times. He was being ordered to sign it. The document did not leave him any choice. If he failed to sign, the New Morality could cancel his public service contract and have him return to Earth at the convenience of the IAA personnel on station. That meant all the time in transit to Jupiter would have been totally wasted, and the time spent waiting for transport back to Earth and the transit time itself would also be wasted. Worse yet, Grant got the distinct feeling that once back home he would be assigned the lowliest, meanest, dirtiest public service job that the authorities could find for him. They dealt harshly with dissenters and objectors. So, he signed the secrecy agreement. In essence, it was a simple document. It stated that any and all information, data, knowledge, and facts that he acquired while serving his public service obligation were classified secret and were not to be divulged to any person, agency, or computer network, under punishment of law. Grant felt whipsawed. The New Morality wanted him to report on what the scientists were doing. The IAA wanted to swear him to secrecy. Then, a new understanding dawned within him. They don't trust each other. The IAA and the New Morality may share the responsibility for running Station Gold, but they don't trust each other. They don't even like each other. And they've put me in the middle. Whatever I do, I'm going to be in trouble, he realized. Wishing both sides would just leave him alone, wondering exactly what was going on among the researchers at Gold that had to be kept so secret, Grant signed the document and, as directed by the automated legal program, held his palm-sized computer to first his right eye and then his left, so that whoever was registering his agreement recorded both his retinal prints. All these precautions left Grant feeling baffled, worried, and more than a little angry. They had one good effect, however. Once Roberts established its co-orbital rendezvous with the space station and Grant toted his one travel bag down to the airlock hatch, Tavallera said goodbye to him with a newfound respect in his eyes. It's almost funny, Grant thought. For most of the trip out here, I was halfway convinced that Raoul was a New Morality informer. Now he's certain that I'm one. He almost laughed as he shook Tavallera's hand in a final goodbye. Almost. Then he realized that he actually was a New Morality informer. At least, that's what the NM expected him to be. Welcome to the Gulag. Grant at last got a look at the orbiting research station. A glimpse, nothing more, as he ducked through the transfer tube that had been set up to connect the station's docking hub with Robert's airlock. That brief glimpse disturbed him even more. He was silently offering a prayer of thanksgiving at his safe arrival and a supplication to make me worthy, O Lord, of the task you have given me. As he looked up through the transfer tube's overhead window, the curving surface of the station looked huge, mammoth, a gigantic looming structure that filled the transfer tube's observation port like a colossal arch of gray metal, dulled and pitted from long years of exposure to radiation and infalling cosmic dust. A childhood memory flashed through Grant's mind, the time his parents had taken him to San Francisco and they had somehow gotten themselves lost in a seedy, dangerous part of the city near the enormous dirt-encrusted supporting buttresses of the Bay Bridge. Grant's breath had caught in his throat. For a moment, he'd imagined the entire weight of that immense bridge crashing down on him, crushing him and his parents in their flimsy, open-topped automobile in a thundering tangle of steel girders and ponderous blocks of stone. As he made his solitary way through the slightly flexible transfer tube, he got that same sudden feeling. This enormous, thick wheel of a station was going to come crashing down upon him any moment now. Again, his breath caught for just a heartbeat of an instant. He felt very small, very vulnerable, very close to death. The instant passed. Grant finished his prayer as he strode on alone through the tube. He was the only person transferring from the freighter to the research station. The flooring felt soft and spongy beneath his boots, especially after so many months of the freighter's steel decks. "Everything's fine," he told himself. He remembered that the instant he stepped through the hatch at the far end of the tube, he was officially engaged in his public service duty. Every second would count toward his 4-year commitment. Every second would bring him closer to Marjorie, to home, to the life he wanted. But he had seen something in that brief glimpse of the station, something that should not have been. Grant had memorized the station's layout after months of studying it during the long trip out to Jupiter. Research Station Gold was a massive, fat donut of a structure more than 5 kilometers in diameter. It rotated once every 2 minutes to give its interior a spin-induced artificial gravity of almost exactly 1G, so that its inhabitants would feel a comfortable earthly gravity inside the station. Grant had seen an additional structure sticking out from the donut shape, a metallic lenticular section, round and flattened like a discus, connected to the station by a single slender tube, literally poking out from the main body of the station like a sore thumb. It should not have been there. Grant knew the schematics of Station Gold by heart. He had pored over its design details and operations manuals for months. There was no extra section hanging out on one side of the donut. There couldn't be. It would unbalance the station's spin and inevitably destabilize it so badly that it would shake the structure apart. It could not be there, Grant knew. Yet he had seen it. He was certain of that. He felt puzzled, almost worried, as he took the few steps that brought him to the end of the transfer tunnel. Grant had to duck slightly to get through the hatch that connected with the station itself. As he stepped through, he found himself in a small, bare chamber. Its metal walls were scuffed, dull. Its flooring was metal gridwork. Once it had been painted, Grant saw, but there was nothing left of the paint except a few grayish chips clinging here and there. A tall, slim man in light gray casual slacks and soft blue velour shirt was standing there, waiting for him with a listless, bored expression on his angular, ascetic face. Grant had never seen such a pallid complexion. The man looked almost ghostly. His hair was very light, almost white, thin and straight, hanging down to his shoulders. Despite the silvery hair, Grant guessed that the man was only slightly older than himself. "Grant Archer?" the man asked needlessly, extending his right hand. Grant nodded as he shifted his travel bag and took the offered hand. "I'm Egon Karlstead," the man said. His grip seemed measured, not too strong, not too soft. "Good to meet you," said Grant.